Третий срок тюремный. Третий срок тюремный.
Что так было всегда, что судьбою он больше.
Смотрите, как здесь круто. Это гайд-парк.
A third term in prison. That's what demonstrators chanted on the day Vladimir Putin was sworn in for a third term as president nearly 2 weeks ago. And Moscow's streets have been far from quiet since. The unrest began on the eve of the inauguration ceremony when police violently broke up an opposition demonstration and hasn't let up, with protests becoming practically a daily occurrence. Demonstrators occupied a park and a square in central Moscow before being evicted by police. Writers staged a march through the capital, and artists plan a similar demonstration over the weekend. Meanwhile, the newly configured tandem of President Vladimir Putin and Prime Minister Dmitry Medvedev have struggled to form a government. The politics of the street and the machinations in the corridors of power. Hello and welcome to the Power Vertical podcast. My name is Brian Whitmore, author of the Power Vertical blog here at RFERL. In the studio with me is my regular co-host, Kirill Kobrin, managing editor of RFERL's Russian service. Welcome, Kirill.
Welcome.
The protest mood in the Russian capital shows no sign of abating, and the authorities, meanwhile, are showing signs that they are planning to take even tougher measures. Environmental activist Yevgenia Chirikova was detained in an Occupy-style demonstration on Thursday. Ilya Yashin, another opposition figure, received a 10-day administrative sentence a day earlier. Opposition figures Alexei Navalny and Sergei Udaltsov are still serving 15-day sentences for their part in the demonstrations, and press reports say they could be prosecuted for incitement under the criminal code and face long prison terms. Kirill, I guess I want to start with two questions. First, how much do these demonstrations matter in the larger scheme of Russian politics? Critics say just a few hundred or even a few thousand protesters is not enough to force any kind of change. And second, how tough are the authorities prepared to get?
Well, first of all, not few hundreds or few thousands, but a few tens of thousand people, because opposition estimated the numbers during the protests on the 6th of May, before the Putin's inauguration, as something about 50,000 people.
Yeah. No, I'm speaking of the ongoing protests that are going on an almost daily basis.
But there were no any huge demonstration after that, with one exception. This
Writers' March
or Writers' Stroll.
Yeah.
Right, to stroll along the boulevards. Again, opposition leaders, they estimate the numbers of this stroll as 10 or 15,000 people.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Without any preparations, by the way. Any preparations, mm-hmm. just the information which you could read on Facebook, and that's all. So the first surprise of the authorities and also of the opposition was during the last 2 or 3 weeks, I think, that was and still is the numbers. The numbers. Mm-hmm. Everyone, including us, by the way, mm-hmm. me and you, told that the protests, the scale of the protests
are going down.
But it is not true. That is very interesting. That is my first point. Then I think we'll discuss the reasons of this and what the consequences of this. Secondly, if we return, you asked about, is it some kind of a special Moscow phenomenon, or it's...
Well, this is something, yeah, I wanted to talk about. Is this just a Moscow phenomenon, and how... And I would also add that it's being a Moscow phenomenon isn't always a bad thing. Moscow is where most of the money, power, and wealth is, and influence in Russia is concentrated, and the authorities have undoubtedly lost the capital.
Yes, sure. To be a Moscow thing, you know, it's not such bad as anybody thinks about this. First of all, let's return to the events of the second, uh, anniversary of the 6th of May. It was very interesting because I monitored, I was monitoring very closely what's going on before this demonstration. And I can say that there is no any, on a large scale, such preparations as it was during the December or February protests. You, of course, you could read something about we are going to attend the demonstration or rally or riot, not riot, but demonstration.
Sorry,
yes. Sorry, Putin. On the 6th of May, but it was not so popular on Facebook, and I can... asking this question, I already have an answer because I didn't monitor VKontakte and other more popular, more regional, more lowbrow social networks.
You were looking at Facebook and Twitter.
Yes, yes. And that is the answer. That was the event that had been organized by leftist groups, communist movements, by nationalists, and so on. And a very modest part of so-called liberal protesters attended during this demonstration. That's why it was there were some such clashes, because usually liberal demonstrators, they don't behave in such way.
Right,
yeah?
Right.
And what happened next? After all this leftist organization, they gathered all this crowd, tens and tens and tens of the opposition protesters.
Thousands, yeah.
Thousands of protesters. Then liberal leaders, they stole the show. Because when the clashes began, who could win the, you know, PR war.
Right.
Or PR struggle with the official television and so on. Just this liberal...
Right. The leftists certainly aren't going to win that fight.
So, and when I watched all these events on TV screen, Russian television, on the internet and so on, I understood the mechanism of this kind of unusual union or collaboration of leftist and nationalist forces with the liberal movement in Russia. Not because just because they hate or irritate.
You mean active collaboration or accidental collaboration?
Active. Because they need each other in some way.
At this point, they certainly
do. Yes. For
if
sure.
If they ever win, they won't.
For sure. But now, and I think we have to understand the mechanism of this collaboration and what exactly they need from each other. For instance, what the leftist movement needs from this liberal and creative class and so on. Of course, all this PR campaign. Because they failed every time when they tried to do something by themselves on internet and so on, because they don't have any way to official TV and so on. So their only solution of this problem is to join the forces with the liberal creative class, which can do everything from nothing on internet.
Right, right. They're very, very good at this.
Yes.
And the working class can occupy the streets.
Yes. This is that is the chemistry of this marriage.
And you think it is coordinated? It is consciously organized this way?
In some way, yes. In some way, no. Of course, when they discussed the forthcoming events, the leaders like Udaltsov, he is from the left, and for instance Navalny. Of course, all of them had and still have in mind some objections about the political reasons of joining the ranks with such people. But now when the main enemy is Putin and Putin's regime, they decided to help each other.
And an example of how this PR thing is working, this PR campaign is working even beyond Russia's borders, Amnesty International today declared both of them prisoners of conscience. Navalny on the right and Udaltsov on the left.
On the left, and Udaltsov, he's a Stalinist.
Yeah.
His hero is Stalin. Don't forget about this. And you can just, you could imagine what Stalin will or would do with all these people.
No, I don't want to imagine what Stalin would do with all these people.
Yeah.
Another thing as I mentioned earlier on, how tough are the authorities prepared to get right now? Because there's reports in the press that Udaltsov and Navalny, going back to them, could be prosecuted under the criminal code. They're serving a 15-day administrative sentence, which is really, I mean, it's almost like a badge of honor for these guys to get administrative sentences. But they could face, what is it? Is it 2 years is what they could face according to the criminal code? According to...
I think two years, of course, theoretically. But right. The answer is that, I understand, that Putin and his aides and the Kremlin as political force didn't decide yet what to do in this situation. First of all, don't forget that Putin still is absolutely silent about all these events.
Yeah, yeah.
I think he's very uneasy, and all his supporters and all his people, they're very uneasy about what's going on. They can't understand how to cope, how to handle the protests and so on.
Although his press secretary had some very harsh words.
Yes, but it was a mistake, a very serious political mistake, because he couldn't speak so in such a tone, such a voice, being an official right. figure. So, and this is the situation when, as a Russian proverb says, каждая лыка в строку. You know, yes, everything that can be said or made by these people mm-hmm. is against them.
Yeah,
you know. So in this situation, it is very, and I understand all this feeling of uneasiness. Yeah, you know,
yeah.
Of Putin and all this, all his people, because everything that you are doing now could be against you,
yeah.
could be turned against you, because if you will be very tough against the protesters, you know, all the Western countries and so on, on the very, very delicate moment of the beginning of the third term.
Yeah, when he needs the legitimacy.
Yes, yes. But if he will be too liberal to them, they can...
They'll just continue
yes,
doing what they're doing.
Yes, and they will claim more and more and more and more.
Yeah.
So what to do in this situation? Of course, in the previous years, Putin and his supporters and all these people around Putin, they could be a little bit weak. A little bit more witty than now, because
mm-hmm.
as we had a lot of discussions of the role of Pavlovsky, Surkov, and so on, there were another people with the taste and with the ability of their political intrigue.
And these people understood Russian society probably better. I mean, I'm speaking of Pavlovsky and Surkov better
more
than anybody
Volodin,
else in the halls of
yes,
more than Volodin, more than anybody else
sure.
in the halls of power. They,
yes.
they weren't just political intriguers, but they understood the whole mechanism of how society works, how society will react to different kind of stimuli. And without them, Volodin, quite frankly, looks very crude in the way he
and not very clever. And all these measures that they undertook against the opposition leaders and so on, including all the threats against Navalny and Udaltsov and this 2 years prison term and so on, is just irritating the society. The best way, which won the, I think, the presidential campaign in January and February for Putin, was just to ignore,
mm-hmm.
not to mention, because you can say to the population of all Russia, to all these workers from Ural Vagonmash and right. Nizhny Tagil and so on, I am a very serious man. I am a leader of a great nation. I have a really serious problems, the unemployment, financial problems, so on. If these people want to I don't know, to demonstrate against me, okay, they can do this. And but I'm very serious. They are not serious.
Well, but that strategy seemed to work in the election. It many analysts think it won Putin the election.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
He basically set Moscow against the provinces, and he set the creative class and the working classes against each other. Now, I guess the big question I have is, this is a Moscow phenomenon. There's scattered protests in other parts of Russia, but this right now is largely a Moscow phenomenon. The authorities have lost the capital. Even if you look at the results of the official results of the election, they really lost the capital.
Yes, by the way, sorry for interrupting you, but if we return to these events of this, on the 6th of May, there were a lot of people from Russian regions.
Coming to Moscow.
Yes, coming to Moscow as a part of a leftist movement. So don't forget about
well,
it.
It's very, very. So the people from the regions came to Moscow.
Yeah.
How much can this phenomenon spread from Moscow to the regions?
Russian people, they know that all the things really of real importance, political importance, they happen in Moscow. If you want to change something, you have to change this in Moscow. I think that this is a delusion.
I would note to our readers, this is coming from not from a Muscovite,
yes,
but from a native of Nizhny Novgorod.
Yes, but it doesn't
matter.
Our
listeners, I mean.
it doesn't matter because as we spoke some months ago about so-called grassroots democracy and so on, the real solution of the recent political crisis in Russia is not on the Moscow squares and just strolling along Moscow boulevards and so on. This is a very hard and a very slow work to grow somehow the very roots, the first, I thought, I don't know, first leaves of...
grass
roots,
sprouts of
democracy. Yes.
We have several processes going on right now. I mean, we have this grassroots thing going on in the regions that we're seeing in the mayor's elections. We have this temporary alliance of convenience between the creative class and the working class developing. How combustible is this situation? The question I keep thinking is, will this change anything, or can the authorities just keep swatting this away and continue to go on with business as usual, which is what the critics say? A bunch of people demonstrating in Moscow, big deal. Putin's in the Kremlin. He's got all the levers of power. He's not going anywhere. Where do you see this going? Because in some ways it looks like the classic irresistible force meeting the immovable object. Where is this going to go?
I think that there are two points, main points. First of all, this kind of unusual collaboration between communists, and creative class in Russian opposition will continue as long as Putin will go on to irritate the society.
What can he do to stop irritating the society?
First of all, not to mention all these things. And secondly, not to do foolish things, like this statement by Dmitry Peskov, his press secretary, and so on. If he want to produce kind of image of a real leader of a nation, of a serious leader of a nation, he can speak in such language.
Mm-hmm.
He can speak in such language. He is not a criminal, or petty criminal from some kind of St. Petersburg or Leningrad Bekert street.
Right.
Yeah?
I'm waiting for his next. I mean, he has this fondness for toilet references and sewer references. I'm waiting for his next gem to come out when he finally does speak.
Yes, it's a kind of psychological problem, but don't forget that many revolutions in the Western world began from such lapses. Marie Antoinette.
Yes.
Nicholas II. So I can quote a lot of things about this.
We've reversed roles, Kirill. This is very interesting because I remember a few months ago I said, are we in a revolutionary situation? And you said, not so fast. And now again, I would note to our listeners, it was Kirill who first used this formulation today.
I can agree that I mistakenly decided that the protests are going down several months ago. It was a mistake. And I agree.
I'm becoming the cautious
yes.
one now and wondering yes. if this is just another false alarm. Is there anything the authorities can do? They're not going to leave willingly, at least not yet.
The situation that they cannot
leave. Can they
reform?
Can they reform in a way that would pacify this? Is there anything they can do? Can he afford? I don't know what that possibly could be because the next election cycle is 6 years away.
That's why I'm speaking about kind of cul-de-sac. In the previous times, in the previous crisis, they tried to divide the opposition. They tried to divide the opposition. Now they even don't undertake such attempts to do this, first of all. Secondly, they lose all their ability to political intrigues and so on.
That's they don't have Surkov anymore.
not just Surkov, but I think it's kind of a new political, old new political culture in the Kremlin now. To be tough and to be, how to tell it mildly, to be
crude?
Yes, to be crude. Yes,
because it is. But they look clumsy. Yes. They look clumsy. They look very, very clumsy.
Very clumsy, and they make a lot of mistakes. And thirdly, they have to be very cautious about everything. And it seems that they are not now.
Right. In a few moments, I want to turn from the streets of Moscow to the halls of power and the machinations surrounding the formation of Prime Minister Dmitry Medvedev's government. I'd like to remind you that you have been listening to the Power Vertical podcast. My name is Brian Whitmore, author of the Power Vertical blog here at RFERL. In the studio with me is my regular co-host, Kirill Kobrin, managing editor of RFERL's Russian service. I'd also like to remind you that you can read the Power Vertical blog at RFERL.org. You can also subscribe to the Power Vertical podcast on iTunes, and you can follow us on Twitter at Power Vertical.
Я хотел бы сказать, что мы будем работать со всеми.
I would like to say that the cabinet that I will present to the Russian president for approval and I will work together with everyone for one single reason. We all want prosperity for our country, and we will work for this.
И мы будем для этого работать.
That was Prime Minister Dmitry Medvedev speaking after his confirmation by the State Duma on May 8th. 10 days later, Medvedev's government has still not been formed. And there have been constant reports in the Russian media that this, at least partially, is the result of disagreement between Putin and Medvedev over the government's composition. Kirill, what's going on here? I don't remember it ever taking so long to form a government in Russia. And also, is this going to be Medvedev's cabinet or just an extension of Putin's Kremlin?
Speaking frankly, I don't know. And there are two reasons. First of all, we have just rumors about this, and a lot of rumors that, for instance, Mikhail Prokhorov and Sergei Kirienko, they declined the invitation to become deputy prime minister. And there were a lot of rumors about Igor Shuvalov's role in the future cabinet.
Who's Putin's man and would be basically Medvedev's overseer if he becomes first deputy prime minister.
And some words about Kudrin and so on. But
we've also heard that Surkov could be back as the chief of staff of the government, which would set up a round two of his conflict with Volodin, who will be in the Kremlin.
That's why I think that it's better not to to discuss the rumors, because in 2 or 3 days
they can change.
Yes, to turn our attention to another thing, to the fate of so-called Medvedev reformers, all the circle of experts,
Dvorkovich,
Jurgens, and so on. It is very interesting because this is a group of people with a very, very serious support from business community, who supported Medvedev as a, they thought about this, as an independent or semi-independent political figure in Russian politics. And they, speaking in financial language, they invested their aspirations into Medvedev's
future. And
they
lobbied very hard for him to get a second term as president.
They even elaborate kind of economic program of the reforms and so on. And there was kind of a special institution for this, Institute of Modernization and so on. And now they look like total fools. Yeah, in this, because what to do after what happened from the September
till now.
So for me, it's not a question if some of these people will enter the government or not.
Medvedev wanted Dvorkovich and Jurgens in the government, but it looks like Putin's vetoed that.
Yes, but it will be it would be the end of their political career as political figures and so on, because in this case, they'll show themselves as just a kind of, you know, just tools.
Yeah.
Just political tools without any their own opinions, political thoughts, and so on. So that is a situation of a very important choice of these system liberals in Kremlin and around Kremlin.
What do they do now?
What do they will do now? Before these protests in May and before all this political crisis, and I'm sure that now we have a political crisis in Russia, there was kind of illusion that Medvedev's cabinet will be liberal. And somehow it will balance their conservative.
So we'd have just a reconfiguration of what used to the White House and the Kremlin switch places, just like the Prime Minister and the President.
Yes, the tandem just changed the places, and that's all. But now the line is or has been divided. Crossed.
Crossed.
Yeah. The line has been crossed during the clashes of 6th of May. And now we have an absolutely fresh situation, because all the forces which are opposing the modernization of Russia, they are on the Kremlin's side. They are in Kremlin. They are around Putin. And to connect themselves to this, I don't know, circle, to this force, is to destroy your future career in the future Russian politics. And I think, and I am almost sure, that Kudrin, Dvorkovich, Jurgens, and so on, they will never do this thing.
They will never
join the cabinet and so on.
Although they're often making friendly noises towards the opposition. Kudrin just last week made a comment, or 2 weeks ago, made a comment to Interfax that what happened on the 6th should show the authorities the need for reform. Now, Kudrin is not just a former finance minister and a good economist and a good technocrat. He's a personal friend of Vladimir Putin's.
Yes, and Putin has a few rather close figures, not friends. I'm not sure about friends of Putin. But
Kudrin's a friend.
In some sense, yeah. And all of them, they can speak him everything. But now the situation for Putin himself is absolutely different. Now his legitimacy,
is in trouble.
Yes, is in trouble. And in this sense, and in this situation, he will not think about modernization, reforms, and so on. The only thing which is he's thinking about is how to keep power.
Yeah. Well, as you know, I wrote on the blog this week that what we're seeing in the halls of power is a conflict within the ruling elite, between the managers on one hand and the shareholders on the other.
Yeah.
The shareholders are people like Igor Sechin. They got a stake in the system. He's got the oil, the oil industry. And a manager is somebody like Kudrin or Surkov, who have a skilled. Have a specific skill in managing something, whether it be the political system or the economy. And the managers understand, by virtue of their expertise, that the system needs to change. The shareholders, on the other hand, because they have a stake in things being the way they are, because they're collecting rents from the oil and gas industry, for example, they don't want it to change because they're afraid any reform will take away their wealth and their privilege. This conflict, I think, is at the heart of everything we're seeing in the elite right now. What do you think of that?
You know, I had historical analogous, but
you're a historian.
Yes, that's why I hate them. real historian, trained historian,
they hate historical analogous.
Yes, but I can compare.
We political scientists love them.
I know. But I can compare the situation with the situation in USSR in the beginning of 80s. There was opposition inside or division inside the ruling elite in the late Soviet Union between so-called partokrate.
Mm-hmm.
The party aristocracy and aging party aristocracy and the people from KGB, because who else could know about the real situation in the country
KGB.
Better than KGB. And all the attempts to reform USSR
came from the KGB.
Came from the KGB. They were managers. They were managers and shareholders. They were Brezhnev, Chernenko, and so on. Now we have the situation vice versa. The people from KGB, former KGB,
are shareholders.
And managers are managers.
Yeah.
Real managers. And I think in this sense, this is a real progress in Russian history.
Well, so how do you? And we know how it ended up in the Soviet Union. Basically, the managers in the KGB hired a manager called Gorbachev to.
Yes.
First, they tried to have their own manager Andropov
yes.
do it, and he failed.
Yeah.
Not because
he died too early, because he failed from the very beginning. He didn't know what to do. What to do? All his, as we told some months ago, the very beginning of his reforms, they were silly.
Right.
From the point of view inside the USSR, as I told you. But now...
Then they hired a rising party star from Stavropol called Mikhail Gorbachev to manage for them.
And they failed
He betrayed them by their estimation.
Or he failed, maybe.
Where do you see this going now? I mean, let's push this analogy.
It's a very interesting situation. I think this is my strong opinion that even if we are speaking about the Russian politics, which is not real politics, as we a lot of times spoke, but we have to discuss or define this political situation in modern Russia in a strict Western political terms.
Mm-hmm.
Because if we are trying to speak in kind of native political jargon, we can't understand anything in
because
this
it's
sense.
All misnomers.
Yes,
elections aren't elections, the parliament's not a parliament.
It's very local. Yes, and we have to be rational. Yes, even if we are trying to define or to explain chaos, we have to be rational,
right.
And we have to use a rational linguistic terminology.
All right. So, what do you see in Western political science terms?
Yes. So, speaking about Russian politics. We are speaking about Russian government, Russian authorities, Russian president, State Duma, and so on. Heads of states, higher bureaucracy, they have to have consciousness of a statesman.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they have to think about the interests of all society, of the state. They can understand all these interests in various ways, but they have to be a real statesman in some sense. Not to think about their money or about their lovers and so on. To think about the state. When we're speaking in such way about all these people like Sechin, Timchenko, and so on, all these shareholders, they are not statesmen. They don't have this kind of consciousness.
You just anticipated me, because one of the things I was just thinking about is that the shareholders think in terms of their parochial self-interest, be it oil, gas, whatever. The managers, your Kudrins or your Surkovs or your Dvorkoviches, they think about the interests of the whole system.
They combine the interests or their own interests with the interests of the state, in some sense.
Yes,
of course.
But they're thinking of the interests. When Kudrin's talking about the need to reform the economy, now, left-wing economists could disagree with Kudrin's neoliberalism, but I wouldn't doubt his sincerity that he's thinking this is the best thing for the system as a whole.
You can't run the country without any ideas what's you are doing and what's for.
And what you have in the Kremlin now, if you and I think you're correct, the shareholders are all in the Kremlin. They are only thinking in terms of parochial interests, and nobody,
yes,
not even the president,
yes,
seems to be thinking,
yes,
about, yes, the interests of the state.
That's why I'm kind of optimist in a long-term
sense
because this situation cannot continue so long. Because it's a great country, very large, very important in political terms all over the world, in economic terms, and so
with
on.
With an extremely talented,
yes,
population.
Yes, and Western-oriented, some part of the population, and so westernized, and so on. Because and at all, as a result of this, if we return to the beginning of our conversation, discussion, all this leftist and democratic or liberal opposition, they have another one very important mutual basis. They have some ideas about the future of,
yeah,
the country.
Yeah, yeah. And this is where Udaltsov looks,
yes,
so different from Zhuganov.
Yes.
And how Navalny,
yes,
looks so different from anybody in the Duma.
From Nemtsov.
From Nemtsov, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, because they do have an idea where they want to take the country.
Yes,
we may not like these
ideas or not, but they have it, them. But they have the ideas about the future, about what Russia is really and what it has to be.
Well, I mean, usually when any government, in whether it's a Western democratic or an authoritarian government, whenever they lose this vision of where they want to take the country, and whenever the society begins to sense that they don't have any vision about where they want to take the country, they're just in it for themselves, that's the beginning of the end for that regime, really.
Berlusconi in Italy,
yeah, for example. Yeah. Is this the beginning of the end?
I don't know.
I'm not a prophet,
but sure. But I see, and I can say definitely that Russia now is into a very serious political crisis, and it's not just a crisis that the government or authorities, they don't know what to do with all this opposition, protests, and so on. This is the ideological crisis. This is a political crisis on the level of political theory, and this is a very serious political crisis based on a very serious social crisis and division.
And we are truly in uncharted territory here. I mean,
no one knows where this is going.
Yeah. And on that, we'll have to leave it today. Unfortunately, that's all we have time for today. As always, I could go on for hours, but we won't. I'd like to remind you, you've been listening to the Power Vertical podcast. My name is Brian Whitmore, author of the Power Vertical blog here at RFERL. In the studio with me has been my regular co-host, Kirill Kobrin, managing editor of RFERL's Russian service. I'd also like to remind you that you can read the Power Vertical blog at RFERL.org. You can subscribe to the Power Vertical podcast on iTunes, and you can follow us on Twitter at Power Vertical. Join us again next week, and now, as always, I leave you with the ambient sounds of my favorite socially conscious Russian rapper, Noise MC.